My darling, it's time to put a stop to all the madness. You deserve so much more in your life. It's your time to glow up. Welcome to the Time to Glow Up podcast with Rebecca Hennings and guests. Your journey to transforming from the inside out begins here.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, okay. So I've known you, Rachel, for a number of years now. How long has it been? Six, seven years?
7 years, I would say,
Okay. And through that time, you know, we've obviously learned a lot about each other. We met because we had a business. We both had businesses and we were working with a coach and all that sort of stuff. And I always knew that you'd had cancer. And I obviously hadn't had that experience in the beginning. And then, you know, I had my own, as you know, 2 years ago. So I found your journey very fascinating. And that's why, you know, I've said, Rachel, can we talk, please, for the podcast? And so we'll talk about that. But I think it'd be really good. Obviously, there are people who are listening to this who don't know you, don't know anything about Rachel. They know there's this beautiful woman on the screen, but we don't know who she is. So I think it would just be really good to find out a bit more about who Rachel Johnson is and where you're coming from, what you've done. So for the listeners out there, or for the viewers indeed, just sum up who you are and what you do in a nutshell, what you've done in a nutshell.
What I've done in a nutshell, I've done quite a lot of things. I just get business idea and I run with it, as you know.
Yeah.
We met when I had the cleaning business, didn't I? But I wanted to do stuff to help people after cancer. So throughout the years, that's what I've just been working on, working towards helping people with the time from when you've told you don't have cancer to the time you go back to work. You know, there's a little period that nobody talks about.
But there was stuff before that, though, because I just remember meeting this Rachel and she was like running this like cleaning empire. I just felt like you were just on top of the world. So, you know, so take us back.
Yes. So the reason why I started that was because I had cancer. I started it before cancer. I was very I was into sales. I love sales. I was salesy, really into the time I found out I had cancer. I just had a baby. He was 9 months old.
Oh my gosh, okay. So you need to go all the way back then, because I met you post cancer. And so let's just for clarity, what year did you get cancer?
2009.
So take us back before that. What was life like before you got cancer?
Life like before I got cancer, I'm just going to be honest, I was quite self-absorbed.
Do you live your best life?
I was like, yes, because I can do it. I was a bit, you know, like, you know, just go and do anything. Before I had children, I would actually quit a job to go on a friend's holiday. Oh, I've done that before. I literally was like, well, I come back, I'll get a job. I get jobs really easily, and I suppose that's a bit of it's a plus and it's a little bit of a, you know, negative, because that made me job hop for many years. So before
cancer, you should live the life you wanted to live at the time.
What I wanted to do, I traveled, I was really outgoing, and then I decided to go across the Isles and went to Jamaica for a few times. That's where my background's from. And then I met my partner and decided, oh, I'm going to move to Jamaica. So I was living there for a few years. Then my first son was born. I had him back in the UK. And then we went back over when he was really young, like 2 months. And was out there for a while. And then when I came back, I was like, right, normality.
Slow down. So what was the plan? You know, you've been having this fantastic life. You met the man of your dreams. So much so that you got married. But still had a child together. You knew that you were going to be together. So, I mean, okay. Take us through that a little bit. So what did that feel like, to finally feel like, oh my gosh, I found him, I've got my child, What was that like?
It was like a dream. I always wanted, you know, husband, children. I always wanted that, even though I was a kind of wild party. Mm-hmm. Once I got that, I settled right down. And then when I came back to England, I was like, right, I don't really want to raise my son in Jamaica, because mm-hmm. I saw a lot of things. I thought, no, I want to go back. That's so hard. I went back.
What?
Yeah, little things. They report everything on the news. You'd be surprised that England really hides a lot of stuff on the news. We don't hear everything.
Okay.
But on that small island, you hear everything.
I'm assuming you're talking about violence and...
Yeah, a lot of violence, kidnapping, stuff like that. So,
okay.
So I moved back to the UK and I could bring my partner with me. So did that. And literally, as soon as he came, not even 2 months, he came in May. I had a lump before he came in April on my neck.
You still no. I stay with life was good, because we're coming to that. But I really want to paint the picture of what life was like before cancer came.
Settled, like I was settled. Yeah. I was ready to take on the world with my family.
Yes.
I wanted to get married.
Yeah.
I was going to get married, and it was good.
So you only had the one son, because I know obviously you got two children. So you only had the one child at the time.
At that time, yeah.
And how old was your son? How old was he before you got cancer?
8 months.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I'm just thinking, again, new mom, new relationship. You brought your man over. Things are fantastic. What was going through your mind at like the height of your joy?
I was planning my wedding.
Yeah, wow.
I was planning my wedding.
Yeah.
I was so excited. We were young love. We really loved each other. We used to look at each other in the eyes and just be like... it was really good, really good.
Okay, all right. So, we're getting there. Mm-hmm. So, life was good. And so, what happened? What was the moment when things changed forever?
As
in, when did you know something was wrong?
Okay, so it was really weird. It was in April 2009. Me and my sister was driving. I was driving, she was in passenger. And I got a sharp pain. Like, you know when you got flu and you feel a bit achy?
Mm.
And I said, oh, I've got interview in a couple of days. Trust me to get a cold.
Mm.
And I thought, I'm getting the flu, Rianne. I don't feel good. I've got pains. I'm getting the flu. And she was like, oh, dear, just wear a scarf and just go in there. Just fix yourself up. You'll be fine.
Mm.
I was like, you want that job as well? And then that night I went to bed. And at the time, I was living in England in my mum's house with was my brother there as well? No, just my sister.
Mm.
They were living in Florida. So they.
So where was your partner?
He was not there yet.
Oh, okay.
So this
okay.
was April.
Okay.
He came in May.
Yeah. Okay, right, okay.
So then one night I just felt this big sharp pain. Boosh. I just woke up that same night. I woke up. I was like, oh, my gosh. What is this? And my neck was swollen like this.
Oh, my gosh.
I was like, ah, my sister.
So, wait, oh, my gosh. So you woke up. You felt this pain.
I felt like someone stabbed me in my neck.
Oh, my gosh. And so you looked in the mirror and your neck was swollen.
I didn't look. I felt first. And
oh,
I was
my gosh.
I looked in the mirror and I was like, I've got mumps. I've got mumps. This is what mumps looks like. I've got mumps. I diagnosed myself with mumps and went to the doctor the next day and told him I've got mumps. and she said, oh, no, I think it's infection of the gland. It wasn't my normal doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Just gave me antibiotics. So I took that. Swelling went down. Pain went.
So at this stage, there was you did not at all suspect that it might be cancer?
Definitely not.
Okay.
Definitely not. Mm. And I'm never sick. I never go to doctors. I'm never sick. So my head was far away from that.
Mm.
Sorry, just to cut you before I go. So it's funny that... I noticed that there's a lot of people what will say, I think it's cancer.
Mm.
I've never been that type. Mm-hmm. I've never been that, I think it's cancer, I think it's the worst.
Right.
And so I was not thinking about nothing like that. And so after about 2 weeks, there are little lumps that are growing. Like, you know, when you got a cold and your glands pop up?
So hold on. So the swelling went down.
Down, pain went.
Okay. Yeah.
And it was a small lump. Like my glands were still up. So I just thought, oh, it's probably not gone. Plus, I hate taking tablets, so I didn't finish my course. So I was like, oh, I'm going to have to get another course. Went back to the doctor and he said, I don't think it's that. Send you for an x-ray.
Yeah.
Went for an x-ray, come back results, came back negative, nothing wrong with me.
Negative. So
I left it for a while.
Oh my gosh. So, wait, you know, it's so funny because, you know, in all the time I've known you, I've never heard you tell this story. So as you're telling it, knowing that I know you right now, I'm on the edge.
Yeah, and then it just started growing. It started growing, but it was weird. It only grew. So it was sticking out, but if I turn my neck, well, you can't tell. Like I turn my neck like this, the lump would protrude more.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so it was like, turn my neck, and it would be like, look at, and I'd be like, look at this, everyone.
So even though they said the x-ray come back as negative.
It was just the x-ray. Why are you doing the x-ray? It's obviously glands. So I should have had a scan.
Ah. Cool.
And then.
X-ray, okay. Exactly. Yeah, so because obviously if they saw nothing from the x-ray, they and the lump is still there, they want to know what the lump is. So then they then had to go and do the scan. Okay.
And mm-hmm. then they did a biopsy. They sent me for not even a biopsy, endoscopy. Endoscopy is when they stick this tube with a camera on the end down your nose to have a look in the back of your throat. Extremely painful. I nearly punched the doctor. It was so bad. I was like, ah! It's okay. I don't want you to die to me.
Oh my god.
Oh, it's horrible. But then he saw something and he was like, okay, I see this on you. Are you a smoker? No, I'm not. Oh, I see this and da, da, da. And he goes, oh, I'm going to refer you to another hospital. It's a specialist in head and neck. So I was like, okay, cool. Went over there. And even when I was in there, I had no clue that I was in a cancer clinic because they share it with audiology. Mm-hmm. So you're just thinking ENT, isn't it? Not thinking anything. I thought it was really good service that from Thursday I got appointment by the Tuesday. This service is really good. No clue when it moves this fast, it's something serious. Absolutely no clue. So I then went to St. George's Hospital and they did a biopsy. And I said, when will I get the result?
Just thought I should clarify that Rachel's in London and I'm in Birmingham. So St. George's Hospital is in London. Yeah,
in London. So they did a biopsy and he said, I can see something under the slides, but I'm just going to get a second opinion. So when I got the second opinion, I was just like, da 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 da, da. Had no idea.
Were you by yourself?
Yeah, I was by myself. Just went. I nearly was by myself when I got the results, but I'll get back to that in a sec. Okay. And so what did he do? So then he went, but that person who'd done the second opinion turned out to be my actual consultant.
Mm.
It's the same man. So they said, oh, come back on Tuesday at the next clinic. So that was Thursday clinic, come back on Tuesday. Oh, good service again. When I was at reception, have you got any jobs here? She was like, right, just get through this first, and then we'll talk about, you can go on the website, NHS website. I goes, I know, but you know, I always work for NHS. Just tell me who the recruitment manager is. And then I can take it from there. She went, let's do this first. I went, okay. None the wise, obviously she knew at that stage. And then I went in on Tuesday. Mum said, where are you going? I said, oh, I've got to go and get my results for this thing on my neck. She said, oh, I'll come with you because I've got to go to Tooting as well. And that's how my mom came with me. Had no idea.
You went into the room. And
went into the room and then I was sitting there and he said, oh, this is such and such. But he never said student. He never said, he just said specialist nurse, but he never said student. Never said. And I thought, oh, why is there another nurse in here then?
Mm.
And my mum was miming to me, going like this. And I was going, and she's like, but I couldn't hear her. And as he was talking, he was saying, so we found some
love. What was her name?
She was miming, it's a Mac Miller nurse in the room.
Oh my God.
I was going,
Oh, telltale sign. Okay.
Yeah. And I was like, what are you talking about? Anyway, so he just went on to say, and then the lump we found was malignant. And I was like, I was shocked at first, cried. My mum was angry. Mm. No, that's not true. You have to do more tests. And I was just seeing bits. I was like, those years ago, 2009, you used to think that people would just die from cancer. It's changed a lot over the years now. It's not even shocking if someone is diagnosed like before. It's so common now, unfortunately. But what's also common is that a lot of people recover from it.
Yeah.
Then I was just like, right, he was explaining to me that I have a good chance. They're going to do some more tests, blah, 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 blah. So
at that point, did they say what stage it was? No. Cancer of the throat?
Head and neck cancer.
Head and neck cancer, okay.
Which means there was a growth behind my nose.
Oh, my God.
So if I turn to the side, you just picture there was a growth here.
Yeah.
What was happening is that the glands on this side was pulling the cells, and it was building up because it was trying to fix the cells, the cancer cells.
Right.
That's what caused the lump in my neck.
Isn't so the tumor, great in that respect.
I know. I thought I had a little bit here.
Yeah.
And a little bit here.
Yeah.
It's only when I was halfway through the treatment, the radiotherapist said, oh, wow, it shrank loads. It was massive. It was right from here all the way down your neck. Wow. I was like, I had no idea that was in my head.
So how did it feel to have that inside your body? Because like, I know that when I had breast cancer, I didn't feel a thing.
No, I didn't feel it. No, nothing. They said you get nosebleeds. I was like, never had one.
So if you didn't have that swelling in your throat, if the glands didn't swell, you wouldn't know.
I wouldn't know, and it would have spread quite.
And that was your body trying to rectify what was going on. Oh my God. That is mind blowing. No, seriously, I feel like you've been watched.
Yes, definitely.
Like, so many people, you know, they get to a really late stage not having felt the cancer.
Exactly.
I got the abnormal bleeding. You got the gland swelling.
Yeah.
And if you didn't have that, you wouldn't necessarily have known.
No, I didn't feel sick or anything.
Yeah, wow. Okay, so... So you were diagnosed.
Sorry.
Crazy upset. How did you break it? Did you tell your children?
Deshaun's 9 months.
One child, sorry.
One child, and he was 9 months.
Yeah, of course not.
I had to go back and tell DJ. He had just been in the country for a month, literally. And it was. I just literally wanted to tell everybody in the first 2 days.
Yeah. I was like that. I just wanted to
just tell everybody, and I'm glad I did, because after 2 days, I couldn't tell the story anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I just wanted to tell everyone, get it out of the way.
So how did he take it?
Oh, he was devastated. He was just thinking, how is this possible? Mm. You know, we're finally together in England. He's just literally just got there. It was really hard going, actually.
Okay, but yeah. Time, and I want to make sure to get all of this in. So, so you were then. What treatment were you given? You mentioned radiotherapy.
I had everything. I had chemotherapy, radiotherapy.
How long? And surgery.
My original chemotherapy was supposed to be 4 rounds of 4 days intense. So I'd stay in hospital for 4 days. However, after the second round, they found out I had one chance in whatever billion allergic reaction. So my heart would slow right down, like I fainted.
Oh my gosh.
So, and that one was supposed to make me infertile, 5FU.
And you went on to have another child.
So, because when I prayed, before that, I had to make a decision though. I don't want to miss that bit out. I had to make a decision. They said to me, do you want more children? I said, I would like to have more children. And they said, well, there's a high chance that you could become infertile. However, we can freeze your eggs because you're young. We can freeze your eggs, but that would be an IVF.
By the way, how old were you?
28.
Okay.
28. And they said that you can freeze your eggs. But it could take up to 6 months to make sure that the egg and the sperm obviously is compatible to go through the IVF process and freeze it. So I was like, well, I've got a baby here in the cot. I remember lying on my bed actually and looking at the cot, and I was just looking at him sleeping, and I was like, how could I risk my life to have another child when there's a child right here in front of me? And I just said, you know what, God, I know you'll find a way. You'll find a way. I'm going to trust in you.
But I don't understand. Sorry. How would you be risking your life?
Because I'd have to wait longer.
Of course, so that the cancer could grow. And
Because they wouldn't start the treatment until I finished the IVF.
Okay.
And they said it could take 6 months.
Right.
So I thought, why would I? And at that stage, I didn't know how radical it was. It would be a waiting game to test me again and see how quickly it is growing. Because they had no idea how long it took for it to grow.
Did they say what stage it was?
Not at that stage, but I was stage. Was that stage four?
Oh my
gosh! What's the second from the highest? Is it four?
Third, three, stage three.
Stage three.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Because I know that the higher the stage, the less. What is it? What's the best way of putting this? The lower your chances of survival are over a long period of time. So you've done extremely well.
Yeah. And what happened after that? Oh, yeah. So they changed my chemotherapy drug.
Right.
They had to go to the NHS board to find out if they are allowed to have a more expensive drug for me.
Okay, wow.
And because I was young, because I had a child... And because I had the allergic reaction, the NHS board then agreed that I could have citrapram, which it doesn't make you infertile.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So you went through the treatment.
Citrapram was horrible. It was like the worst.
And what was that like? Because you lost your hair, right?
Oh, yeah. I lost my hair through radio, not the chemo.
Really? I didn't know you could lose your hair through radiotherapy.
Yeah, the radio, because my radio was in my face. So everything it touches, it burns, basically.
Oh.
Yeah, and the citrapram, I had to take that alongside the radiotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
The side effects means that it's working is that your face blisters.
Mm.
So I had all of these blisters all over my face.
How did you cope with that? Because obviously you're a beautiful young woman. You were very young.
I did not cope with that. That was my final straw.
What happened? Like, how did you feel? Like, how did you cope?
Like a monster. It was horrible. It was so bad. And there would be like these big, massive boils full of white pus. And you couldn't burst them. I bursted a few and I left with some. They told me if you burst them, you're going to have holes, you know, acne scars type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a few here where I just couldn't leave them on my face.
Mm-hmm.
But I started staying in the house. I didn't want to go nowhere. It was not nice.
Really knocked your self-esteem?
That did. The hair loss I could live with because I could just put a wig on.
Mm-hmm.
But even that started getting to me because when it did start growing back, the top part grew back what I had shaved off in the end because I lost, it was all round here and a piece in the middle where the radiotherapy exits.
Mm.
And that's what, the chances of it growing back from radiotherapy is far less than if I lost it through chemo.
I didn't know.
So I was really praying. I've still got a patch at the back here.
Yeah.
That grows back and then falls out, grows back and falls out. And that circle there is one of the exits. And the same with here. I've got a little one here.
What do you mean by exit? Like, it goes in your face and then it finds a way of coming out?
It has to, yeah. The radiotherapy has to exit.
Oh my God.
So they had to control it, and the purpose of it was to shrink the cancer growth, mm-hmm. and to shrink it into a place that they could cut it out.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted to basically get it away from my nose, my nasal capacity, shrink it down, and if that was successful, then there was hoping that it would disappear completely, but it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But their main aim was to draw it down to the neck where they can get access and remove it.
And that's exactly what they did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Oh my gosh, Rachel. I mean, I could talk to you about this some. I just have so many questions, but you know, yeah. time is limited.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, I had so much admiration for you anyway, but just hearing this story now, I'm like, how are you the way you are now? Because I know that you're going through a massive glow up period. And when I met you, that you were already like on a high and running your businesses. So how did you get from having all of this stuff done to you, going through the emotional trauma of having cancer, having to deal with, you know, what it did to your hair, what it did to your face, your relationship, I imagine that can't have been easy. Being a new mother, that must have been really difficult. How did you get over all those difficulties and start to rise again?
Becky, it was not easy at all. It was not easy. It was the most difficult thing I've ever done in my whole life. Because once the cancer went, I had a lot of scarring. I had blisters on my neck. I couldn't eat food. I was fed for a tube. Because the radiotherapy burns all of your mouth and your throat.
So how long were you eating through a tube?
Probably about 6 months-ish, or maybe a bit before. Oh. When I stopped my job working as a share dealer, I was eating Mueller rice for lunch. That's all I could eat, Mueller rice. I was so happy when I could move on to the flavours of Mueller rice, strawberry and banana. And do you know what? I think it was that job as well, because everyone knew I had cancer, everyone in my whole life. Oh, how you doing? How you doing? How you doing? And I remember starting this job and they had no idea I had cancer. And it's funny because I found my ID badge the other day and you can actually see my face is still swollen because I had a lot of erythema? Swollen?
Edema.
Oh, edema short, yeah. Edema short. Yeah. I had a lot of that. So some mornings I'd wake up and it would just be swollen again. I just got on with it. I put my wig on. They had no idea. That the great thing, they were all university students working in there at first, because I went through like a summer camp campaign. I went to just inquire about my sister, and they said, "Oh, do you want to do it?" And I was like, "So you know, I'm gonna go back to work." And I thought, "Fake it till I make it." And I went in there, and they had no idea. And I realised it really isn't that bad. Yeah. That was a turning point for me because I went into a very low, dark place that I never want to visit again.
Yeah. So the fact of you being in an environment where people weren't constantly talking about the fact you had cancer and you could just be...
They had no idea.
You could adopt another identity, another version of Rachel. That helped.
I was Rachel again. Yeah. What was so great, at the time, I was planning my wedding. And they said, "You're planning your wedding? How old are you?" And I was like, "I'm 30. And they were like, 30? I thought you was our age. Like, remember their unibods here? Yeah. So I was like, "Oh." So that really boosted my confidence. I just, one day, what happened to me, I remember when I was going through that really dark stage, everyone got fed up with me. Everyone in my home, my family, my friends, not so much all my friends, but my family especially. But my partner was always, he was always supportive, emotionally supportive. But even he got to a stage where it's like, "You can't live like this. The cancer's gone. Why you?" I literally was staying in my pajamas, not doing anything. I didn't want to go anywhere. I didn't want to, because I still had all of the blisters and everything. Then my mum became my crutch. Mm-hmm. I'd only go shop if she came with me to the shop, or if she was going shop, then I'd jump on the shop and say, and I'd go. But other than that, I wouldn't go anywhere by myself. Mm-hmm. And I remember there was this lady, I can't remember her full name, Erica. She's a makeup artist, mm-hmm. but she used to be a model, and she was in a very serious accident in a petrol station, and she got over 200 scars on her face, and she learned to do makeup. Yeah, and she learned to do makeup and basically live her life again, and she became a very good makeup artist, her own company called Face the Facts. And I just read her story and I just got so inspired by it. I've got to face the facts, I've got to move forward, I've got to move on. First step is go to a makeup counter and get them to do my face. Now, I had to go to more than one, quite a few, because I'd come out looking like a monster again. I would have, you know, because I had so many different shades on my face.
Yeah.
I had black hair, reddish hair, had all different fades. And I found one girl in Kingston, if you're listening, thank you. She gave me all these little pots and she showed me how to do my makeup. And then I realized I can look okay. Then I can start, you know, start to be a bit more confident. But it was not an easy process at all. So the time you met me, Becky, I already had my glow up in the shares when I was working at the shares. I was finally normal again, even though I had to keep going to hospital every month. They made me take it as leave as well. So ironic, because their charity that they supported was Macmillan, but I had to use up all my holidays.
I'm sure that, I mean, certainly now that wouldn't be legal, because now if you've been diagnosed with cancer, you're protected under the Disability Act.
Yeah. Ah,
there you are.
Yeah, no, they made me take it as holiday leave, so I never had holidays. They were all used up on my hospital appointments. I hate that place. And then, so I decided one day, I was sitting there pregnant. I was married by now.
Because you had a second baby.
Yeah, I was married by now. And I was pregnant. And I just found out and I thought, right, I'm not staying here.
Yeah.
I didn't beat cancer to work in this mundane job. I beat cancer to live my best life.
Right, that's right.
Yeah, and I decided to have a look at some franchise opportunities. So I wanted to, you know, run my business, but I didn't know how.
Yeah. But. And so, lo and behold, I met you way back when, 7 years ago, where you had this flourishing cleaning business, and you then started your cancer organization.
Yeah. It was Dancing Hills, Pure Rays. I was trying to support a group of people what was like me, but in theory, I was actually healing myself.
Yes, yeah.
Even though I was doing this, you know, you met me all vibrant and happy, I still had some, I'd say, raw bones that I couldn't speak to anybody about.
Yeah. You still had work to do. Yeah.
I still had work to do. So I started the group. And as you know, I wrote the ebook.
Yes.
And then I parked it up, didn't I? I parked it up.
But speaking of books, you're writing another one, right?
I am.
Quickly tell us about that.
So that's called Cancer God Now What? And that is for once you're told that there is no more cancer, there's a really difficult period to get your glow up, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And that period is dealing with all the stuff I did. Only way I could put it is like you're a soldier. You've just come out of a war. And afterwards, you're broken.
Yeah.
And I felt really broken, like really low. When you've got cancer, you just keep turning the wheel, motivating yourself. I've got to beat this. I've got to beat this. I've got to beat this. And then it's like, right, we've beaten it.
Yeah.
Off go.
And everyone else is like, yeah, see you later then. Yeah. Ooh, you're right.
It's the most loneliest time.
It is.
Everybody gets on with their life. And then I was there like, still with my swollen face. My arms all being up. I was like, you know, I had to have physiotherapy because, I lost a major nerve in my neck. So that's why my shoulders always slump. But my arm was like that, couldn't move. I had to learn to move it all again. And it was like, has this gone or not? Why do I feel worse?
Yeah, exactly. And no one talks about that, the aftermath of cancer. No. Yeah.
I felt worse.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically, that's what my book's about. It's an easy guide to help people through that stage.
Right.
And just to let them know that they're not alone.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just little things like chemo brain, but it's actually not fog brain. All of those forgetful things that happen after trauma, no one explains why you can't string two words together.
Yeah.
Can't explain yourself properly.
Yeah.
Can't comprehend reading.
I didn't have chemo, but I had chemo brain. There's a name for it, cognitive something or another.
Yeah.
Just look that up. But yeah, I totally get it, where you forget things, your mind's foggy, you're not on point, you lack clarity.
Yes.
Yeah, but it goes after a while. Okay, all right, great. So you're writing this book, brilliant. And this year has been a massive, massive, massive year with regards to your glow up, because every time I look at your Instagram page, Rachel's out doing something else. So what's changed this year for you? What's made you feel like, yeah, I want to get out there again and just do me?
I think because I became very complacent with life. So I was all grateful, and then I got through cancer and I ran a few businesses, and then I went back to work, and then I just got complacent.
Yeah.
And I ate.
Yeah.
And I ate.
Yes. And also we started our weight loss WhatsApp group last November.
Yes.
November 2018.
Yeah.
And I know that was a massive shift for you as well. You lost a lot of weight.
Yeah.
Group, and so as have I.
Exactly.
So you went to the comedy event. Now I think this is hilarious, the fact that you were not into fitness at all, but we said that when we lose loads of weight and we've got our new bikini bodies, we're going to go to this fitness event. And yeah, you're calling it a what?
I was calling it a fitness boot camp.
And it was no such thing. 3 days fitness
boot camp, Becky. Yes. No. It's gonna be fun. And I was like, you know what, let me just, I was really sick of where I got.
Yeah.
And to get to a stagnant stage of just complacency,
yeah,
is worse than feeling, yeah, low.
Yeah.
But you're not fighting or driving to go forward to do anything.
Yeah. What was all that for? Why did you go through all that if you're just going to be complacent? I hear that.
Exactly.
And I think it is important to have these reminders. Every time I hear someone being diagnosed, every time I hear someone passing away, every time I get scared because I'm constantly getting cancer scares, I'm reminded that you went through that for a reason. And, right, you know, and you know, for you, it was the weight thing. I think it's whenever something remotely negative happens in your life or something that you see, it reminds you, kind of makes you think, hold on a second.
I didn't survive for this.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I totally understand. And I think for me, I think it's really important that people who are watching this kind of get that for themselves. Like, we don't want them to have to go through having cancer to realize your life is precious. Do what you need to do now. Do it today. Get on it.
You know what I think, Becky? I think you have to go through a traumatic time,
yeah,
in to know that you can have more.
I hear what you're saying. I think it's easier to realize when you've gone through a traumatic period, but do you have to have been through something really emotionally traumatic for you to understand that your life is precious and that you need to get on with stuff? Can you not just be motivated anyway by learning through other people's experiences? I think you can. I think it's possible. Just like you said, you were motivated by the fact that woman had changed her makeup, and that, do you know what I mean? I feel like just that person alone inspired you. Okay, she did go.
If I read it and I didn't have any scars on my face, I wouldn't. Yeah. I'd be like, oh, that's sweet.
I hear what you're saying. But I still think it's possible. I think, yes, it's easier when you've gone through that pain because you want to move away from the pain to pleasure. So I think that's what it is. You have to have gone through something painful, but I don't think you have to necessarily have experienced it. I think you can create it. I think you can imagine a really negative situation, think about the worst possible scenario and use that to motivate you. No, it won't be the same as actually having gone through it, but the brain doesn't know the difference between something that is vividly imagined and something that is real. So I think you can trick your brain. This is something that Anthony Robbins says. You can trick your brain into feeling that pain, and that will then motivate you, because as human beings, we are more motivated by pain than we are by pleasure.
Gratefulness comes into it, because there was a man sleeping rough in my block last weekend when it was ice cold.
Yeah.
I went downstairs to let my cat out and I saw some homeless person sleeping. Yeah. I immediately ran up the stairs. I was in my dressing gown for one. Yeah. I don't know who's sleeping there. Yeah. And this is not an area where people sleep, but I've never been homeless. but I felt that pain, and I came in my house being so grateful.
Yeah.
So I suppose if you magnify that situation,
to be
more grateful, then you can push it more. Like, so grateful that I've got a roof over my head.
Yeah.
There's times I complain that my hallway's too small.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly what it is. It's about putting yourself in a, that's exactly it. Once you realize that, hold on a second, I am in a great position here because I could be here. So it's comparing that greatness in your life now to what it could be, which is the pain. So I think, we're singing off the same hymn sheet. Okay, Rachel, we've got to wrap up. But before you go, and before I say a massive thank you to you, I just want you to finish the following statements, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Okay. To truly love yourself, you must.
To truly love yourself. For me, you have to get to know yourself, who you are. Mm. To truly love yourself, you really got to work on personal development and know who you are. I'm not going to go on too much, but there's certain cards that you're given in life can affect the way you are, but. Yeah. Who is the true you?
Yeah.
So you have to know who you are. Yeah.
I cannot do without.
Not chips and mayonnaise.
That's the first thing that comes to your head. We're going to move on. Right. When all else fails.
Long as you have the will to keep going. When all else fails, as long as the will is there, you will be successful. You'll always find the way.
The way to joy is?
The way to joy is true happiness.
The best piece of advice I've received is?
Oh my gosh, there's so much, Becky. That's a hard one.
I know. Just pick one.
Best piece of advice I've received is wake up at 5 a.m. to write my book.
And that's exactly what you're doing. Rachel, I want to thank you so much for spending this
thank
time.
Thank you for having me.
Go through that again. As I said, just hearing it, I've never heard you tell that story. And, you know, inside I'm like, I want to bawl right about now. But, you know, I've known post-cancer, and I just want to just big you up. I want to salute you. I want to wish you nothing but absolutely the best as you continue on this journey. And I'll make sure that we include your social media details in all the blurbs so that people want to hook up with you, get advice from you, buy your book.
Yay.
Exactly where to find you. But Rachel, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Becky, for having me.
Welcome. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.